had no idea when you invited me that it would coincide with the Giants.
Exactly.
Being in
I was
the
going
series.
To introduce you as almost batting cleanup for the Giants, but
yeah, well, you know, I'm from the Bay Area, so we're all really excited by that. So I may gloss over some things. Hopefully not, but if I do, it most of what I'm going to be talking about today is been published already in the journal Genetics, and I encourage you to look there for more detailed information. How do I advance the slide here? Okay. This is just a example of some of the things I'm not going to be talking about today, and that's switchgrass and pop culture. But it is amazing that, especially the episode of The Simpsons, where switchgrass appeared, that the public is aware of what we're doing here, and this really speaks to our need to get it right, because you know the public is watching, even though they have their own take on it. So today I am going to be talking about my work developing a switchgrass linkage map. This work today, it didn't seem this way when I started, but today it's a bit dated because we used microsatellites and capillary electrophoresis, and we didn't use SNPs or high throughput genotyping. We did most of the scoring in a semi-automated fashion using a 3730 sequence analyzer. And what we did is generate a population of 238 F1 individuals using two different cultivars, Canlo and Alamo. Alamo was the male parent. About 5% of the population was selves, and so we identified those early on and discarded them from our analysis. The markers were developed from published expressed sequence tags, from predicted intron sequences, and from intergenic SSRs that were developed at the Nobel Foundation by Molloy Saha. The population itself is planted, well, we have it in the greenhouse. It's also planted out in Tifton, Georgia, and we've shipped it also to Austin, Texas to, Tom's lab. Sorry about that. And this is the resulting map. The linkage map, again, appeared in Genetics, and all of the raw data is available from the Genetics website. We also have sent the comparative map data that was included to Grameen, and last time I checked, which was about a week ago, the data was not in Grameen, so one couldn't do interactive types of analysis, but he told me that it should be appearing in the next release of Grameen, which will be hopefully soon. This next couple of slides are quite busy, showing the linkage map and the associated accessory markers. The linkage map we produced had 37 linkage groups, which combined. We did a separate analysis of the male and female linkage maps, and they condensed down to 9 homology groups. So this is a tetraploid accession, and so each map will have 4 homeologs for each of the 9 linkage groups. The maps we created were done using join map and the maximum likelihood regression algorithm. There are some markers that we could not order, and those were treated as accessory markers and are shown off to the right of the map. Because this is a pseudo test cross type of linkage map, one uses markers that segregate one to one, and that is their single copy in each, their single dose markers in each of the parents. But that can create some problems, especially if you have heterozygotes with complementary alleles and you've made mistakes in scoring, or there are PCR allele dropouts or various other artifacts that can cause the same marker to map to very close to one another. And in those cases, they're indicated like I think right here. So these markers were scored from the same PCR reaction, but produced two complementary peaks. And so the suffix here just represents the size of the allele that was detected. And in some cases, you know, markers were detected across the male and female maps. Those markers that are in blue here with a D suffix were ones that segregated 3 to 1 and were, in that case, they would be single dose but present in both parents. And so those were very helpful for aligning the homology groups, but weren't part of our framework map because they couldn't be placed with a high confidence. So we added them later after we created the framework map. And then it's very, you have to very strain your eyes, but you see there are asterisks next to some of the markers, and those are ones that were showing segregation distortion. And the segregation distortion was present mostly in the male map, which is quite common and can be due to prezygotic or postzygotic incompatibility mechanisms or other mechanisms. And these segregated significantly differently from a one-to-one ratio, but were below the threshold for a 3-to-1 ratio, which would be a double dose marker. And these are some of the other linkage groups. Should be mentioned that the linkage groups were grouped at a log value of 8, except where noted by these gray bars, which were linked at a lower threshold of either 6 or 4. So there's a lot of information encompassed here. I don't think I want to go into that much more detail about what's presented here. It's a very static view of the maps. You can easily summarize the data showing the number of total number of amplicons, the number that were polymorphic between the parents, the numbers that were distorted in each map, and this presents sort of an overall summary of the maps. The total map length was for all markers included was 1,400 centimorgans in the female versus 1,748 centimorgans in the male map. Again, this was map inflation was probably due to the interaction of distorted loci that caused that. Overall, about 97% of the genome size that was predicted was within 10 centimorgans of a marker. This is a little bit more dynamic way of viewing the data. This is an output of a graphing function called CIRCOS, which allows one to easily compare maps and present different aspects of the data. So in this case, we're showing all those markers that mapped across linkage groups, the same PCR probe detected alleles in different linkage groups. And I'm showing this to remind me to tell you that we did see significant subgenome divergence from what would be expected based on a simulation study, which we performed by taking markers that looked as if they were dizomic and that they amplified no more than two alleles, and determined the allele frequencies in populations of Canlo and Alamo. And based on that, we arrived at what would be expected based on no subgenome differentiation. And we got significantly different results than what would be expected. In fact, based on the numbers of markers that did amplify across subgenomes, it's similar to what would be expected based on distantly related species within the same genus or possibly closely allied species within different genuses. Which is interesting because it was presumed that switchgrass was an autopolyploid, but given this, as well as the ratios of markers that were detected in coupling versus repulsion phases, one can test the assumptions of dizomic versus tetrasomic inheritance. And what we see is similar to an earlier mapping study, is that switchgrass is inherited dizomically primarily, which is actually good news in terms of our ability to perform QTL mapping and marker-assisted selection. So there's this significant subgenome differentiation that one can take advantage of. And I'm sure the genome sequencing projects that are ongoing will give us a much more detailed view of this. This is the subset of the 3-to-1 segregation ratios that allow us to link the male and the female map locations. And then here I've aligned, since most of these sequences were derived from ESTs, one can do comparative mapping quite easily. And here we've aligned them with the sorghum genome, which is shown in red here. And what one sees is a close 1-to-1 correspondence between, in most cases, one sorghum chromosome. But since there are 9 basic units in, or 9 basic genomes in, or linkage groups in switchgrass, there's one case here where it looks as if sorghum chromosomes 8 and 9 have been rearranged and are now present in linkage group 3. And here I should mention that the naming convention here is based on that which is used in foxtail millet, because from what we can see, there's a 1-to-1 correspondence between the maps of switchgrass and foxtail millet, which is a fairly close relative. And so there's particularly strong collinearity between sorghum chromosomes 6 and sorghum chromosome 1. The collinearity was extensive in those particular chromosomes. So this, again, is the comparison with foxtail millet, which is here on the left. We went through rice, which is shown in the middle, and then these are the 4 switchgrass linkage groups in each case. And one can see that how one can use rice as a bridge to compare the results. This is, in this case, we're using CMAP. So this is an example of the data that one could use once the map is accessible in Grameen. Now, the population in Tifton was phenotyped, and Bill is probably looking at me right now and running towards the door because this is an unreplicated field trial. But nevertheless, I sent the data to Rongling Wu, who did some QTL mapping. On the x-axis here is the entire genome of switchgrass, and they used a declared threshold here for detecting QTL. And one sees a few cases where there are some significant QTL for crown width on two different dates in the same location for plant height here. And here on a different date here, and that it's also at the same location for dry weight. In this case, we're looking at seed maturity. There's a QTL here, and node length, another QTL. So that's promising, but I think we need to obtain more phenotypic data to be certain that there are existing QTL in this population. Another project that we've been involved in is sequencing of chloroplast genomes in two individuals, one from a lowland population, Canlow, and another from an upland population, Summer. This can be used for defining breeding pools. It's fairly useful for that purpose. For marker studies where one's looking at differences even across ploides, since there's only one chloroplast genome, one can do those types of comparisons directly. There's also cases of maternal inheritance that can be plastid associated, and one can use these chloroplast polymorphisms to look at the frequency of pollen transmission, which may be important for cases where one is doing biotech risk assessment, for instance. In most cases, the chloroplast genome is transmitted maternally, but in some cases, at a low frequency, that's not the case. Here we've aligned the switchgrass chloroplast genome with sorghum and with Brachypodium. They're completely collinear. The color represents just simply percent identity. So one sees a higher percent identity to sorghum than to Brachypodium, say. And then there's also a number of SNPs that we've uncovered. Most of them are in non-coding regions. I think there were maybe five genes that were affected in their coding region, but there's also cases of potential chloroplast genome editing or transcript editing that might sort of confound these results. And this is a list of the largest insertions and deletions between the upland and lowland chloroplast genomes. And these were all in the intergenic regions. Now finally, I'll just mention briefly that we've done some analysis on two dihaploid switchgrass stalks that we uncovered just fortuitously through a screening approach. And since these only have 18 rather than 36 chromosomes, we thought that they would be useful for performing karyotyping. So Hugh Young has done some work on developing karyotypes for these, and this is the results of a program called Caius, I believe, where they're just looking. You can just look at the patterns of chromosome condensation and develop an ideogram of length and condensation pattern. But we also have been using FISH to try to align the linkage maps with the karyotype, and it's been fairly slow going, actually. And I think with that, then I will stop and acknowledge mostly Miki Okada, who did a lot of the data analysis for this map project, as well as Molloy and Saha, who contributed a lot of the markers that I presented on this map. So, thank you.